Hello and welcome to the Chris Allen podcast, brought to you in association with WCRFM, Wolverhampton's local radio station, which you can hear on 101.8 FM, online at wcrfm.com, or by telling your smart speaker to play WCRFM. My guests on this week's podcast are Pam Beckley of The Haven Wolverhampton, with her reflections on the Orange Wolves campaign, highlighting and combating violence against women and girls, plus why Christmas can be a vulnerable time for women and children in abusive households. We'll be also hearing about their Christmas appeal. We'll also be hearing from Council Leader Ian Brookfield on the impact of the terrible fire this week, plus looking forward to the open of the halls in the centre of Wolverhampton. And Deputy Council Leader Stephen Simpkins will be talking about Wolverhampton as an entrepreneurial city and the way we can support each other in this cold weather. The Cabinet Member for Education and Skills, Councillor Chris Burden, will be talking about free school meals, the need to get those reception place applications in for children starting school next September, and also the way that one particular school has been awarded for supporting its most vulnerable pupils. And Public Health Director John Dendley will be talking about the Strep A infection, the best time to take antibiotics, plus the need to keep topped up with the vaccine. First of all, though, I caught up with Councillor Ian Brookfield, and we started off reflecting on the terrible fire this week in Wolverhampton.
My God, I mean, when we started seeing it, I was up. It was quite late, but it's when we started seeing the pictures coming in. I went outside and I actually see the glow from where I am in the north of the city. And you only get to see, you only knew it was really big when you hear 20 fire engines and two of those platforms were in attendance. It was a huge sight, a huge blaze. Listen, I'm plenty, you know, and you mentioned it before, our thanks go to the fire service and all the emergency services who attended. Must have been a really difficult, dangerous job. We at the council, I was getting calls until the early hours of the morning. Can we open up a couple of leisure centres just in case we had to evacuate, you know, give that type of respite, that respite care for anybody. Thankfully, they weren't needed. But a huge blaze, and the work's been going on. And yes, all the streets are now open. I think the only place is still closed is the canal towpath and the section of canal, and it's all to do with these walls. The council will, as a matter of public safety, take those walls down. Obviously, we'll then get back onto the site insurers to pay for that. Mm. But we have the authority to take the walls down if they are a public danger. So I suppose people say, well, why has it been 3, 4, 5 days? Exactly that. Public safety is paramount. And, you know, the world quite rarely would have gone crazy if one of those walls that fell on or onto the main road.
And given the extent of it, the fact that you know, there was no loss of life, and you know, is something to be thankful for. Now, I picked it up on social media and texted some of your colleagues to find out what was going on, and again, you know, people just rallied, didn't they? Really got the news out there quickly. Local people taking pictures, and it's when social media is at its best to give people news ASAP.
It is, and like you said, within 10, 20, 30 minutes, the pictures were coming out from. Let's just call them our local network, our Absolutely. Local journalists, you know, from every vantage point and some from higher vantage points than others. And it just showed the true scale.
Yeah.
And obviously telling people to keep away and keep access open. So you're right. It's a time when social media really does work and to make sure we're okay and checking on each other. Of course, my heart goes out to the businesses. There were some active businesses in that place, and
they're
working to support them, because they've lost their jobs at the moment. So whatever we can do to help out, to redirect, to give them help, we're certainly undertaking that as we speak.
That's good to hear. Now, this coming week, I think it's Thursday, some people are going to have a look around the halls. You did kindly invite me. I can't get there. I'm sending a colleague instead. Our poet in residence, Ian Henry, is going to be joining you to have a look around there with you. But it must be exciting to get close to seeing the halls open after all the work that's been done.
Yeah, no, it's really great news. And you're right, there's a day event this week, Thursday. And this is after the official handover of the keys last week. So the building work section has now finished. AEG, who's running it for the next 25 years, they obviously have to come in and personalise it and put their stuff off and train their people and get and you know, employments for local people as well. So what we have is a first look. And the really good thing is the very first people to perform on the stage will be Wolverhampton school children. So we will have some school children on the stages performing, and it really is a media day. You know, we need to get out just to show people how fantastic these halls are now looking. And of course, early in the new year, what will happen is then, you will have test events. So this is like a theatre having its final dress rehearsal performances, and what they'll do, they'll test the halls with I presume full crowds, and all the staff in place to iron out any bits and bobs. So keep an eye out for those test events.
And then later on June time, world class events coming there. Brilliant.
Well, I'm still waiting to see who's actually going to. You'd think I would know, wouldn't you? But
well, I was stopping it. I was wondering.
Well, no. Listen, as soon as I find out, everybody will find out, because you know, I certainly wouldn't keep that under my hat. I'm hoping it's going to be big and spectacular.
I'm sure it will be. I've noticed you take for granted. You go and fill up your car with fuel, whatever it might be, and that you're getting an honest deal, and what it says on the price there is what you're getting there as well. But you've had Trading Standards in, just checking to reassure people.
Yeah, it's not something people would normally think about. You know, you look at Trading Standards and they go into shops and restaurants and businesses, making sure people get a fair deal. But obviously this week, and this is not my field, by the way. This is the environment and Steve Evans. So I'm grateful for them. And just checking out petrol pumps to make sure, exactly right, the extortionate price we pay, and it is too expensive, for our litre of fuel is coming out at a litre. And I'm pleased to say, bar one or two instances, the whole of the city is getting a fair deal. The people who have had are purely mechanical problems, and they're getting sorted out. So
right,
we've done this before in the city, haven't we? We had the price for a fair pint. Make sure you got a full pint. that emanated from Wolverhampton. Now we're saying, let's make sure you get a fair price for your litre.
You can see your pint. That's the difference, though, isn't it? That's the trouble. So you do rely on it, indeed. Now, we've now seen the end of the Orange Wolves campaign for this year. Obviously, it's an international campaign, and Wolves gets right behind it. I saw a picture of the Labour group all supporting it. I saw a picture of all this Conservative group as well, it has to be said. And obviously, there wasn't enough room there for you all to be together, so there were separate photos. But really important event.
Well, let me just pick that last piece up. Of course, there was enough room. You're being very, very, very kind.
I'm trying to be diplomatic.
You're being diplomatic, but that's okay. That's just politics. People understand that. But the actual message of the campaign is a really important message. And even now, as we're going through the World Cup, there's been adverts on. You know, a lot of people, a lot of women at home. It's a very difficult time. And we're just saying, you know, let's all be aware of it. Let's try and look after each other, and let's tell people there are other options if needed. And so that's what the message of the campaign is. We're not going to tolerate abuse against women, and certainly not in this city. So, is it a month long campaign? Should we actually be doing it all year? I should imagine, Chris, the actual principles of it. But we do need that focal point just to highlight it.
Indeed. And I earlier on my first show today, we chatted to Pam Beckley from The Haven Refuge Wolverhampton as well. I'll give out the numbers and contact details and how people can support over this Christmas period when there is an increase in vulnerability towards women and children during the period, which is very, very sad. But they're always there, The Haven, aren't they?
They are. You're right. I mean, it comes to these key points in a year. I just mentioned the football. It's really stupid, isn't it, that football can bring forward an increase in abuse. But you're right, Christmas, stressful times, etc. And it's the women and children who can't escape, who can't get away from it. And people have previously, in years gone by, turned a blind eye to it, haven't they? And, you know, we shouldn't be doing that anymore. Not in this day and age, Chris.
That's the leader of the City of Wolverhampton Council, Councillor Ian Brookfield. Pam Beckley is the architect of stories at the Haven Refuge in Wolverhampton. Yeah, what a fantastic job title. When she joined Debbie Hookston and I on our early morning Rise and Shine show on Sunday, we started off talking about the Orange Wolves campaign.
So Orange Wolves is part of the United Nations annual Orange the World campaign. And as you rightfully said, it is a campaign to raise awareness about ending violence against women and girls. So there have been quite a few local events this year, some of which we've been a part of. And of course, as always, we've had our own online campaign as well.
Right, and how's that gone, your online campaign? You've just been able to share out some key messages and key advice.
Yes, so this year our focus was on sharing stories of some of the women and girls who we've supported and using their stories to sort of highlight different forms of abuse and raise awareness about the support that is available. Because what we found a lot of times is that women tend to survivors will tell you that they didn't recognize that they were in an abusive relationship while they were in it.
Right.
So we hope that by sharing these stories, you know, women who are at risk can identify with them and relate, and also recognize that support is available.
And we were obviously looking forward to Christmas then, and with the hope with ABBA on board. But actually, Christmas can be a very vulnerable time for some women and children who are in abusive households, can't it?
Yes. So for many of us, it's the most wonderful time of the year, as Andy Williams sings. But for women and children who are vulnerable and at risk, can be a very scary time. So for the last few years, that has been heightened by the pandemic. And of course, now we've got the cost of living crisis, which is only adding to the vulnerability. So, you know, the financial pressures in the build up to Christmas puts women who are at risk of financial abuse at even more risk and makes them even more vulnerable. And then there's the fact that traditionally we tend to consume a lot more alcohol at this time of the year, and though that in itself is not an excuse for abuse, there's no denying the fact that it you know, exacerbates the issue and adds to it. So there are multiple reasons why this time is not necessarily the best for vulnerable women and children, and we're doing our best to make sure that they know that we're here to support them and to give the women who are in our residences as festive a Christmas spirit as possible.
And the contact, just let's mention the contact number now before I forget later, where people can get in touch.
So the phone number, our free helpline, it's available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and it's 08000 194 400.
08000 194 400, and we'll keep mentioning that one as well. Now, I believe you've got a Christmas appeal going.
Yes, we have, Chris. So I mentioned the cost of living crisis earlier, and of course, we've already had situations where women we support in the community, for example, with things like safety planning and counselling, are now coming in and asking for support due to the fact that they cannot provide the basics for themselves and for their children. And we provide them with food parcels, we provide, you know, essential items, and of course, we've got this Christmas appeal which people can donate to help us ensure that these crucial services continue throughout the season. And if you go to our website, which is havenrefuge.org.uk, all the information you need is available on there. So we're inviting people to make a donation to the appeal. We're also inviting people to donate new toys or gifts, which we can then parcel up and present to the women and children we support.
And I like the way, Debbie's gone on your website, so we'll come back to Debbie. I like the way you say new there. Don't fob off.
No,
don't fob off people with, you know, the stuff you're throwing away. Let's look at some new stuff, hey?
Yes, please, because as you can imagine, it's a difficult time, and we want them to feel special. We want them to feel worthy, and like you said, we don't want it to be a situation where it just seems like we're fobbing off things that people don't generally want. And of course, there's also the option to donate a voucher, if that's a better option.
And just looking on your website, Pam, it says here that those vouchers need to be in by the 14th of December.
Yes, thank you for mentioning that, Debbie.
And you're asking for vouchers for Asda, Argus, Smythe's Toys or Smith's Toys and One for All.
Yes, please.
And I think it's really important what Chris and yourself have just said about those things being new. It's about, you know, understanding that these vulnerable women are still, you know, as valuable. We want them to feel treasured and valuable. So giving them a sense of dignity by showing them that we love them, and you know, that gift of kindness by giving them something new.
Yes. And it's havenrefuge.org.uk.
Indeed.
Yeah, havenrefuge.org.uk. Get down there. And Wednesday is the deadline then for those vouchers as well.
And you could buy Christmas cards as well.
There you go. All at havenrefuge.org.uk. Now, you're great, fantastic. And I think I've said to you before, one of the best job titles in the world is Architect of Stories. And a few weeks ago, I was chatting to your colleague, Alexandra, about it's your 50th anniversary next year and you're collecting stories. Aren't you?
Can you believe it? We're going to be 50 next year. I'm still pinching myself.
I hope we invited you to the party.
Absolutely. I will make sure you get a special invite from us. But yeah, we are, again, it's this thing about, you know, telling stories. And we are looking this time, not just for stories from women and children we may have supported, but also people who may have worked with us, people who may have partnered with us, people who may have volunteered with us. We want to collect at least 50 stories to share. And we hope that these stories will help to promote the positive work that we do to support women and children. And and show that we can continue to carry on with doing that work for as long as our services are needed. So yeah, if this sounds like you, if you've got a story to share, please get in touch. Again, if you go to our website and search 50 stories, you will come to a page where you'd be able to register your interest.
That's Pam Beckley of the Haven Refuge in Wolverhampton. Councillor Stephen Simpkins is the deputy leader of the City of Wolverhampton Council. He's also the member for the Inclusive Economy and a councillor for Bilston East. When we caught up, of course, we talked about the weather.
It's coming down slowly, so everybody needs to take care and keep the cold out. But most importantly, check on your neighbours and make sure everybody's okay. And then if they're okay, get in touch with us or the emergency services. We need to look after each other in times like this. It's sub-zero temperatures. We've all got to pull together, I think.
We have indeed. And we're going to be talking mainly about the Entrepreneurial City Award. But while you're on that, though, there's these wonderful warm places now around the city, aren't there, for people to go to as well. And even a shuttle service to get people there as well. So that's going to make a big impact.
It's definitely, and that's what we should be doing. That's what an authority should do, wrap its arms around its citizens as best it can. We've given more resources, we could achieve more. It's as simple as that. And, you know, it's what we need and what we want. And that's part of what we're talking about the entrepreneurial city that brings people into the city for employment, work and play. And that's what we're trying to achieve. So I'm really pleased about the status that an independent body, well, a government body, has given us the most entrepreneurial city in the country with startup rate. That's really, really pleasing for me.
What have they based that on? What's the kind of signs they look for to say you're an entrepreneurial city?
So what they're looking is from businesses with employees from 0 to 49, and they compare us across the country, and we've come back as the most entrepreneurial city within the country. That's pleasing, but we need to move on from that and make it more the most sustainable entrepreneurial city. So whatever we face in the future economically or industrial plans-wise, we need to make sure that we're at the forefront that's what's so pleasing about the Bramfield Institute, at the forefront of green building techniques and modern modular house building. That's important that we keep with the times, never lag behind.
And you're saying there about sustaining, because a lot of this is, you know, a lot of the indicators is the bank startup loans as well. But also it's about not just getting the business going, it's keeping it there, isn't it?
Well, that's the confidence that people have got investing into our city, and that's another indicator of we're doing something right. I'm going to say we're doing everything right, because that'd be churlish of me. But what we need to do is we need to support where we can, but we need to define what we can do and what businesses can do. That's true collaboration.
And people often think of businesses as the big businesses, but actually most of our economy depends on the small and medium enterprises, the so-called SMEs, doesn't it? About 90-odd percent of business depends on that. So even the small businesses, one or two, five, 20 employees, make such a difference.
Really, really important. That gives us a unique difference to anywhere else. So these small businesses, I'm really keen on a picture of how we drive our economy. That if we can assist and support the smaller businesses, then obviously the bigger businesses would be able to help and assist as well. So it's about a partnership and working together.
Now, I've got the Ignite initiative. Ignite sounds a great thing for today on a cold day like this. Tell us a little bit what Ignite's aiming to do.
Right. Well, Ignite means innovate, grow, navigate. Navigate ideas, technology, and entrepreneurship.
You know what? I didn't even know it stood for something. That's an education to me. Well done, mate.
So this is a free business space that we can then give out. You know, you can book at I-10 on our new developments just over the road from I-9, where we can encourage co-working with smaller businesses, but also to make sure that we're giving the right support as an authority to grow our economy and to grow our businesses within our city. So it's a great space. If you get a chance, I'd encourage people to get in touch with Chris Kirkland, who's our major officer bringing in investment and actually facilitates Ignite. It's really important that we do have these spaces, and working with the Chamber of Commerce with Ignite and also the university. So our new graduates, a graduate from the University of Wolverhampton, have got a business space to develop their unique businesses. That then I hope will encourage the newer businesses to come on and stay within the city. But also added on to that, we've got Invest Wolverhampton, which is also another part of our prospectus of what we're doing as an authority to bring investors in and work in partnership with investments. And Chris, again, this is part of Chris Kirkland's badge, so as we can bring more. We need to look inwardly at what we can develop businesses, but outwardly, how can we attract international businesses to come and set up and use our facilities? So they're all sort of linked together. It's really important that we do that and support growth moving forward.
And I'll put those links in. Our interview will go out on my podcast this week. We'll put the links in the show notes there as well. But if people want to get there quicker, go to wolverhampton.gov.uk and they can find their way around there to all the information that's there as well. And we mentioned the warm hubs earlier, just in passing. Again, the information's on the website, isn't it, on the council website?
Yeah. It's a big, and I've got to say, the leader drives this really forward because he's really supportive of this. He's seen some of the great work that they've done in Liverpool and he's brought some of that. But again, it's everything we do has got to be unique to deliver for Wolverhampton. So, you know, we will talk and collaborate with anybody, but we need to put our own slant on it. But Ian's a real big driving force in that, to be fair, and quite right too.
And you know, across the city, as you said earlier, it's about being a neighbour, being a good citizen, isn't it? Looking after each other. It's not political. This is just actually being a good person.
It's, again, like I use the analogy, the authority, and this goes back to the pandemic. We wrapped our arms around the city, and that's because it was what needed to do. And I've just come back from being a keynote speaker at the Arms Covenant, because we're at the forefront of delivering the Arms Covenant in Wolverhampton. And I said, you know, challenges that come forward, and they always say it's going to be challenging. If it's the right thing to do, then the challenges will melt away and we'll meet them head on. And that's true of the warm spaces, true of the community shops. It's important that as an authority, and I think people get the sense that we wrap our arms around all our citizens, whether it be in business, whether it be in the community centres or just generally out there in the community. That's what we want to do.
That's Deputy Council Leader Stephen Simpkins. Councillor Chris Burden is the Cabinet Member for Education and Skills and Work on the City of Wolverhampton Council. The opportunity is there for people to book their reception places for next September. I asked him how it was going.
Yeah, so we're a month into it. It's been open for a month since the 10th of November. It goes to the 15th of January, but we've only had half of our families put their preferences in. It's not first come, first serve.
Right.
But it is a please, get them in, because I know when we're off over Christmas, there are things I'm going to forget to do, and this is something that will fall to the back of your head. Get it in now.
And what? And in terms of people don't do it, what's the kind of implication? Because that obviously doesn't mean their children can not go to school. What's the sort of, what happens? Is it just, is this to help you organise, help them plan? Is that the idea?
Every child's got to get a place at school in Wolverhampton, if you fill it in or not. But we want you to get your preferences in, because if you don't put your preferences in, your child will get a place at school, but you can't be guaranteeing or being likely to get that school that you want or that school that's nearby your house.
Right.
So make sure this helps us to assign them. And if we don't know where people want to go, it becomes difficult, and we'll assign those first preferences as they've come as first preferences, and that might mean you might not get your position that you want.
And you're saving yourself going through all sorts of appeals and the like.
Save yourself the time. It takes minutes. It takes genuinely just takes minutes. It's an easy online form. If you need help with the online form in weekdays, you can ring the council and they will support you with it. Make sure it gets done.
Now, I haven't got the, it's under my nose, but I seem to remember it's wolverhampton.gov.uk/admissions. Or
I believe it is, but the easiest way to do this, instead of remembering that long web address, just Google Wolverhampton Council School Admissions. It will be the first result almost every time.
Okay, that sounds excellent. Now, sticking with admissions, you've got a consultation going at the moment as well.
Yeah, it's not too interesting. We're just having a look at changing a bit of the way that the consultation works. Ultimately, it'll just bring us in line with other authorities, other councils around the country, because we're missing one at the moment, that teachers struggle to get their children into their local schools. We're looking at seeing, well, actually, would people be happy if children were allowed to go to the same schools that their teachers teaching? Right. Cut down carbon emissions, cut down commuting, cut down the cars on the road at the school rush time, and cut down on the fees that teachers are having to pay for breakfast clubs, because they could be going to their own schools. So it's not too interesting. Pretty much everywhere in the country does it already, and our academies, lots of them already do it. But it's something that, it's an opportunity for you to give feedback on how you think how admissions work in Wolverhampton more generally. So if you want to give us some feedback, you can do that.
As well, but mainly it's around whether teachers want their children to go to actually be in the same place as where they work. I can understand, you know, I can understand that one, yeah.
It's very useful, but maybe not something that each teacher would want to make use of.
Yeah, so you can do their preferences around that one. And free school meals, we know people are really, really struggling in lots of different ways. And where's the, you know, access to free school meals? What do people need to know about that?
So, I think the quickest one is, some people don't realise that in certain year groups, everyone is entitled to free school meals.
Right.
And I think that's a really important one. If your child's in reception, year one or year two, it doesn't matter what your income is, you are entitled to free school meals. Now, people spend up to £10 a week on each child for their free school meals. For their you know, packed lunch.
They
could be having a free school meal if they're in reception, year one or year two. Now, more widely, all the other years, you can get access to free school meals. If you are a receipt of certain benefits, you can find them all online as well. Apply through your school. And even if you think, I don't know if I qualify, ask your school and they will apply for you, and they'll keep you involved in that process, because it's a really beneficial thing. And even if you're not going to make use of it, if your child does get free school meals, it's really helpful for the school, because it allows them to access more funding if they have more children who are registered on free school meals. So it's a really useful thing.
All right.
Even if you're not going to... So lots of school funding is calculated by your pupil premium.
Right.
And your pupil premium increases based on how many free school meals children you've got.
Right.
So even if you're not going to make use for it, apply anyway, and your school might end up getting more resources from the government.
So that's for year three and above. But
that's,
if you're in reception, year one, year two, over 10,500 children qualify for free school meals under the government's Universal Infant Free School Meals Scheme, to give it a snappy title. and please do, you know, don't miss out is the word.
Don't miss out. These are, I was shocked, because I remember free school meals in my day weren't amazing. I don't know what school meals were like when you were a kid, Chris, but I've been going through our school canteens.
Semolina.
It's definitely not semolina either. It's quite exotic these days. Actually, some really good menus.
Yeah.
quite culturally broadening for our young people, things that they may not have tried before. Some really exciting things going on in our school canteens. I've been seeing fresh bread, all fresh homemade food.
Right.
I was really blown away, actually.
Yeah. And obviously, that's been high profile for a while now. Jamie Oliver's done a lot of stuff around that as well. No, I wouldn't impose or feel I could impose the school meals I had on them. I just remember the semolina sort of sticks out in my mind with a bit of jam in the middle. That was the only... And so you sort of eat the jam and leave the rest. But if you want to know more, then go to wolverhampton.gov.uk/free school meals and you can find out there. But again, if you just Google it, you can get the information.
If you just Google Wolverhampton Council free school meals, if you haven't remembered that, you're very well prepared with your website addresses today.
I am when I can open up the right thing at the right time. I'm trying to go a bit green here, so I have it all electronic rather than on bits of paper.
Yeah.
But it means I have to read and talk to you at the same time, which means I start rattling on. Anyway, there's this award that's been received by a nursery school, the Attachment Research Community Award. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so this is a really good award that Low Hill Nurseries won. They won the nursery category of how they do training and they respect kids who have attachment and trauma issues. Mm. So this is really important. And that's saying that in Low Hill, that nursery school has some of the best practice in the country on how they address these issues with children and help them through it. I think worthy mention as well, a primary school in Tetnall was a finalist as well.
Right.
So actually, it's been a really good night for Wolverhampton and shows that we've got some really good work with attachment issues and different...
When you say attachment issues, for those who don't know, how would you describe an attachment issue?
So it's a social and emotional mental health issue that many children face. We're going to be seeing more of it after COVID because we've had children who have been at home with their parents 100% of the time who are now having to adapt to that new world of being outside, being socialised, and some people just aren't ready for it. And that's what these nurseries are researching, how they can help and support these children that struggle to be separated. Now, this could be caused by lots of things, by a trauma in childhood or by simple separation from the parents or that family unit that they have now become entirely reliant on. We're all reliant on our families, by all means, but some children are unable to function without it. And that's what these nurseries are really helping with.
And I remember back in the heights of COVID when schools were closed, talking to your predecessor, Dr. Hardacre, about these issues. And it wasn't just about falling behind educationally, it was around the social aspects too.
Yeah, and I think that's something that we need to speak more about of what schools are for. Schools aren't... They're great spaces for learning. They're great places to have that success. But actually, they prime you for life. They teach you how to make friendships. They teach you how to interact with people. They teach you politeness, fairness, equality. And those are the kind of things that students do miss out on. And then they struggle to function in the world that we have to live in. Because ultimately, when you leave school, you may not go through any more education, but you're going to be socialising every single day. And these are things that, if you crack this, if you get this right, you solve a lot of problems in adulthood.
And you know, obviously these schools you mentioned here, one's got an award, one's been nominated, they're getting it sorted. But I do know of other situations there where parents, they try their very best to get children to school, they won't get them to school, there's all sorts of difficulty there. But if you're having those difficulties, then the answer seems to be certainly talk to your school. And they won't judge you because they do recognise it's difficult sometimes to get children and young people to cooperate.
Yeah, so there's 100% your medically diagnosable separation and trauma issues. And there are children who just struggle to go to school. They are separate things, but they're so important. If you were concerned about your children, their progress, speak to your teachers, speak to the school, because these are trained professionals. I think we're especially in primary school, we become friends with our teachers and they feel like part of the community. But they are also trained professionals who can spot things in children. If you've got any concerns, just raise it with them, because actually it could be a really helpful thing for the schools to intervene early, which is really helpful for your children as well.
And don't feel you're going to be judged.
No, it's a completely judgment-free environment to raise these things to the schools. Do not feel like you're going to be judged. It's like, I know people who are nervous to go to the GP because they're scared of A, being judged, or B, feel like they're wasting people's time. No, you are not going to be judged. You are not wasting anyone's time if you have a concern about your child. That is not wasting anyone's time.
Councillor Chris Burden, the Education, Skills and Works member on the City of Wolverhampton Council. John Denley is the Director of Public Health. Obviously, a lot of concern around at the moment about the Strep A infection. When I caught up with him, I asked him what he could tell us.
Well, nationally, it's really sad to hear that 8 children have died, and that's awful for the parents concerned, but it raises concern with everybody who's got children. It really does. You know, it's the worst thing that could possibly happen. On that basis, then, everybody's a hyper-aware really about wondering what the problems are and what the issues are. So we're trying to make sure that we put the right sort of messages out to everybody, really. And the way I try and discuss it or explain it is there's almost different levels here and layers, because it, as with every infectious issue, there are different things that affect different people at different times. So we do have an unusual peak at this time of year. We usually get this in spring, but for some reason we've got it now, and we can maybe talk about the reasons there. Most of the time, if we swabbed everybody in a population, we'd find a lot of strep. We just would. And most of the time, it's really, really harmless. But sometimes it can lead to such things, predominantly scarlet fever, or indeed what's strep throat.
Yeah.
Okay. Those are the two main ones that are coming out there. And for scarlet fever, there's lots of information out there about what the signs are. And at that point, it's sometimes best, and well, it is recommended that we prescribe antibiotics. So all our GPs all geared up for that. On some occasion, it can become invasive group A strep, and that's when it becomes very, very serious.
Right.
So as I've just described, there's three levels. You've got one level in terms of it's out there in the population all the time anyway. Sometimes it manifests and enables such things as scarlet fever and strep throat. And strep throat's a lot more than a sore throat, which can come onto that. And then sometimes that develops further into really a very serious condition. And it's difficult for parents to navigate that. It really is. The thing I'd say about the scarlet fever, the scarlet fever element is make sure you know the signs and symptoms. And a sore throat doesn't necessarily mean it's strep A. It really doesn't. It's really a very, very serious sore throat that isn't responding to what you'd usually give your children, which is your paracetamol and so forth.
But if in doubt, get in touch with your GP, ring 111, and whoever's there will be able to really ask the questions and help you through the symptoms to see the level of seriousness.
Absolutely. The key thing is, if you're worried at all, one of the things I wouldn't recommend is going straight to A&E or going straight to your GP. Ring 111, just get a feel for what's going on with your child. You know your child best as well. And also, don't forget, you've got your local pharmacists around as well. They'll have an idea of what to recommend if you just want to have a chat with them as well. So there's lots of healthcare professionals out there and advice to say, where do I go with this? I'm really concerned. What we're seeing is a lot of parents, and you can understand why, being very, very worried on the back of time of year where we're getting a lot of coughs and colds and sore throats, and we're all in the mix of that. And naturally, you go to kind of, oh, blimey, it's strep, or it's going to be worse. So it's that little balance. But get the support around you. Consider and don't react immediately. Think about, okay, where are we now? What's the guidance? There's plenty of that around. And any further, 111 or pharmacy or GP.
Yeah, the places to go to. It's very difficult. We talked last week about the percentage. It's so low compared with COVID. But if it's your child, you're worried, and therefore it's understandable that people need to have somewhere to go to. So go to 111, go to your pharmacist. You've got your GP there as well. Keep away from A&E, but go to those other places too. Now, antibiotics are used in this regard because they're really important to use. But we also hear, actually, if we overuse antibiotics, they lose their effectiveness. There must be a real balance involved here.
Yeah, this is one of the moments when we need antibiotics the most. And we've been tackling and thinking about, let's say we collectively with the health system, public health and so forth, tackling for nearly 20 years now, to try not to get into a position where we're over-reliant on antibiotics, because the body is such great, it's such a wonderful thing, isn't it, really? And how we react to things. You can build immunity to something you have very frequently. Mm. So they become less and less effective. And that's something at a population level we want to try and avoid. So the things like, if you get a cough straight away, it might be a virus or so. It's not, I need antibiotics straight away. Or, that's sometimes an expectation I hear from my GP colleagues and our NHS colleagues, that there's an expectation that if you go to a GP, you feel as if you haven't had the right treatment unless you've come away with antibiotics on something that's a cough or a cold. And the thing is, antibiotics don't necessarily work at all with viral infections. Otherwise, we would have used them, wouldn't we, for COVID?
Indeed, and so therefore trust your GP is probably one of the messages in that. They do know what's best. And actually, by not giving you antibiotics about something that is relatively minor, they're probably helping you in the future when you really do need it.
Absolutely, and it helps others as well. Again, immunity at a population level and being prepared for when we really do need them.
Now, you mentioned, well, you were chatting to me off air, and we mentioned that actually A&E, or sorry, ITU, got more people there with flu than with COVID, which surprised me.
Yeah, it doesn't mean in any way. So a regional data showing that that there are more people with flu in ITU and HDU in the region than COVID at the moment. Doesn't mean that COVID's gone away. It just means that we're starting to get to that point, which we talked about. We've talked about previously in terms of a perfect storm coming into the winter now, where we've got lots and lots of infections around and lots of very ill people. And you can see the enormous pressure on the NHS at the moment. We've got to try and help them as much as possible and only use them appropriately. It does show with that that actually, you know, there's a different situation with COVID now. Lots of people have got immunity through the vaccines, and it shows the vaccine works. So please, 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 and make sure you have, if you haven't had your first, have it. And if you haven't had your boosters, have it. But also it shows it's really important, Chris. Everybody's appropriately available to have their flu vaccination as well. So you should have been called for your vaccine if appropriate. Go along and get your flu jab as well. It works. They all work.
And you're having a big push.
The debate we've had constantly, haven't we?
We have indeed. We've been talking about it a long time. The message has not changed. And in the push between now and Christmas, you've got some pop-up clinics where people can have their initial vaccination, never mind their boosters.
Yes, we've got a number of pop-ups across the city. We've got them in Bilston. We've got them at the Wolves as well. We've got them down in Phoenix Park as well. We've got so many different pop-ups between now and Christmas. Just to give a bit of a push and availability, we are still finding one new people who are coming forward because it's convenient and available. So we're going to keep doing that to make that availability. Secondly, we are finding quite a lot of people who think, well, I've had one or two, I'm fine. It's about continuing that protection over the longer term. So come and have your booster if you've got availability. It's lots available there. And to find out where, if you can use any search engine or just go to wolverhampton.gov.uk and you'll find out where and when and the availability.
That's Public Health Director John Denley, and that's it from me for this week. All the links from this week's podcast are in the show notes. If you have any news or information for Rise and Shine on Sunday mornings between 7 and 10, or Chris Allen in conversation every Sunday from midday, then please email me, chris@wcrfm.com. Thank you.